Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Good evening, and welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now show on the Blog Talk Radio Network, sponsored by the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. We ask you to visit our NASCA website at NASCA.org, that's NAASCA.org, where you will find a plethora of information about our organization and many, many things about child abuse, its prevention, intervention, and recovery. Everything that NASCA does is free to everyone, and we're all volunteers here. No one's paid, and we have no sponsors. So we rely on self-support through our own contributions. And tonight we are doing a special a co-host show, which we call a hyphenate show. And the reason we call it a hyphenate show is because on Tuesdays and Thursdays, we feature a group of hyphenates, meaning survivor hyphen professional people. They are both survivors of child abuse in their own right and a professional in some capacity. Now, tonight, our co-host is from San Diego, California. She's a survivor and a private psychotherapist. She's worked with other trauma and abuse survivors for years and is a survivor herself of incest. You can see a description of who she is in the description of the show tonight, including that she's worked with all kinds of people and all kinds of situations. She also is a survivor of addiction, various types of addiction actually, and she's now clean and sober for 27 years, I think, or something like that, 30 years more or less, 33 years somewhere in there. We'll find out. But she's clean and sober a long time and a very experienced psychotherapist as well. We find that these people, sometimes they'll answer a question or a query or get into a discussion relating to their personal experience as a survivor. And then other times, of course, they will offer information that comes from the world that they are professional in this case, being a therapist. So we are delighted to have Lori Golden with us from San Diego, California. She's here in the green room, as we say. And I want to invite people to call in. This is an open mic question and answer discussion show, meaning there are no holds barred. As long as the topic that comes up deals with child abuse and trauma, there are 1,000 topics, of course, and we'll be happy to handle any of them with Lori Golden's assistance this evening. Now, I'd like you to use the phone number that's our dedicated number to become part of the panel. We need some panelists tonight. The number is 646-595-2118. 646-595-2118. We have only a couple of panelists with us, and we could use several. And, you know, the discussion will come from whatever gets shared on the show by the panelists, usually. And it's those issues that everybody gets an opportunity to participate in. Everyone gets to share on the topics that come up, and even share more than once on the topics that come up until it seems exhausted. Then we go on to some other topic. But right now, we do need some panelists. So if you're listening tonight and we're planning to stay there in the wings, we'd really love to hear from you on the air. And the number again to dial is 646-595-2118. 646-595-2118. We have one guest who I haven't figured out who it is yet, and the co-host here, the trailer here, is trying to identify them. They both have to be on the green button. That's a Katarina. Okay, great. So we have one, two, three people plus myself and another who's just going to listen tonight. So I'm delighted to welcome everyone to the show. The people that I have, I'm going to introduce now, though. I have Linda from New Jersey. Linda Vitti, of course, is one of those professionals. She also hosts our daytime recovery meetings, recovery from child abuse and trauma, that are held on Zoom. And it's always a delight to have Linda involved in anything. Good evening, Linda, and thank you for being here tonight.
Good evening, Bill. Good evening, Lori. I'm so glad to be here. I love listening to Lori, so I know you're going to do a great show.
Yeah, Lori's great. All right, and before we go to Lori, I'll go to Katarina from Calgary, Alberta, Canada. She calls in regularly. We love Katarina. She always has pertinent things to share and good questions, too. So let me welcome Katarina from Canada to our show, too. God bless you, and welcome to the show, Katarina. Katarina, that you?
No, this is Johnny Rock.
Maybe it's not.
Sorry, I got the wrong
Johnny
name.
Rock. Somebody put the wrong name in. Okay, we'll get that fixed. But Johnny, welcome to the show. Johnny Rock, of course, is a Don't turn the green. Don't turn the green. Put it back. Here we go. Hi. All right, Johnny Rock, you are a longtime member of the NASCA family, several years worth, and you are an ambassador to Louisiana, correct?
Correct.
Right. And we love having you here, and your voice is quite unique. It's not hard when I speak to you to know who it is instantly. So you're going to be on the panel tonight with Lori. And then we do have Bailey Smith with us. She indicated she might just want to listen. I'll let her open her own mic if she wants to talk, because she did call me earlier today and say she wasn't feeling that great. She might just want to listen. So that'll be up to her. But she knows that if she wants to come on the air, all she has to do is open her own mic. All right. So now let's go back to our co-host and bring her on. Lori Golden from San Diego, California, is a survivor and a private psychotherapist. She's worked with many other trauma and abuse survivors. She's a survivor herself of incest, where she says her father sexually abused her from 5 to 16 years old. And she was always filled with terror when the sun went down, because that's when, everything in her room, she says, came alive. She started using drugs in college at 18, and she went on to use she got a food addiction. She had bulimia. She attempted suicide at 27, and she was a Narcotics Anonymous survivor now for 33 years, as well as a Food Addicts Anonymous survivor for 30 years. So, my goodness, she has a lot. She has a book, My House of Lies, Awakening from the Childhood of Sexual Abuse, which is linked in the description of tonight's show. So please do click on that, and you'll be taken to LoriGoldenAuthor.com. That's her website. And we're delighted to welcome her to the show tonight. This is a show where we keep the mics open, Lori, but we're going to start with you open, and Johnny and Linda. And then if Bailey wants to join, she can. But we'll stay with you for a moment here, Lori. Thank you so much for calling in this evening.
Thank you for having me, Bill. I am really grateful to be a part of the NASCA family. I joined recently, and I'm very glad I did. You know, one of the things, being an incest survivor and being a recovering drug addict and food addict for many years, there is nothing better than being involved in a community of people that are striving to live differently in their lives. And no matter how much time I spend, I always get something, not just give something, but get something from listening to other survivors. So I'm really thrilled to be on the show. And I am an incest survivor, and I truly had no memories of being sexually abused until I came off drugs at 37. And within 6 months, I started having flashbacks, and I was really bombarded with suddenly an overwhelming, terrifying ride that I saw no end in sight. It really shook me to my core. And what I've grown to appreciate, you know, in my recovery and listening to other survivors is the incredible way that children survive unspeakable things. And, you know, when I came in and I learned I had post-traumatic stress disorder, I thought, you know, that's a cluster of symptoms, but wow, have I grown to appreciate what an ingenious way of coping. And I find survivors are courageous and brave. And when we grow up, we tend to think we're fearful and we're scared and we're, you know, not risk takers. But the truth of the matter is I have met more courageous people in my recovery and in helping other people in their recovery. It's a real gift to be with other survivors. So I'm just really glad I'm here. And I am a psychotherapist. I started my practice in 1982. But I really came into the work I do today as a result of my sexual abuse recovery and my drug and food recovery and recovery from all other areas, codependency, you name it. So I'm really glad to be here. I'd love to hear anything on anyone's mind.
All right, we'll get to that in a second, but I just want to say that it is really appreciated on our end too that you're here. You have a wonderful way of explaining things and participating, interacting with folks. This is really important. That's the role we want the co-hosts to do, and most of our co-hosts are very good at it. And you kind of just jumped right into the fire a few weeks ago,
yeah.
And you're doing great. Now, you and I talked earlier today, and I just want to put it out to people that, you know, we're certainly here to we're going to ask anyone who may have brought something with them, Lori, to speak up, because we can start with that as a topic. But we also want to say that, you know, the interest from our perspective is, of course, we need to discuss the problem at least briefly so we understand what it is we're talking about. But really the goal here is to present possible solutions and paths to healing and things like that. And we really are doing this show not for Lori, not for me, not for Linda, not for Johnny, but for the newcomer that's out there listening. We want to, you know, help them feel like, wow, these people are pretty incredible, which is very common, that, you know, and hopefully they'll want to come back to another show or go visit the website or whatever it is. So we're going to start with that. Linda, I don't need help. I think that's Linda. Hold on. Okay. So we have Linda from New Jersey. No, we don't need help. Put that back on your – they can't hear me. Ah! Bailey is doing something. Okay. Bailey, stay still. Okay, I'm going to get the show started. The other person can't hear you. Okay. So having said all that, Lori, let me ask. All the mics are open. There are five of us here. Does someone have an issue or a topic that they would like to bring up to get the show started, especially if there's like a real problem topic or a burning desire? We'd love to hear that.
Yeah.
Anybody?
I would too. I would too.
No one is speaking up.
I have one.
I am speaking. There you go, Linda.
Hi, Linda.
Hi. This has come to my mind because of some people I'm treating, but I was really pondering the issue of trauma bonding and how it affects marriages and parental relationship and in-law relationships. So I thought trauma bonding might be a neat topic to dive into if anybody is interested in that.
Can you share a little bit about what you're experiencing in it?
Well, I have someone who has had trauma in childhood with their mother. So the bond is the trauma bond is with the mother and the son. And then the son got married, and 10 years in, his wife feels like the third wheel in the marriage because she can't break that trauma bond.
Yeah.
Now, I need to ask you two, who are both of you are therapists. I need each of you to understand that most of the people listening are not. So you need to define trauma bonding for the majority of the people listening before we go forward.
Yes. Yes, I agree. Linda, can you?
Linda, can you tell us what it is you mean by trauma bonding?
What you mean by trauma bonding? Yeah, bonding.
What I mean by it is when you go through trauma with someone, or you've had trauma and someone else has trauma, there can be a bond that's not necessarily healthy, but it's a bond from your shared experience in the trauma.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I know for me, in my personal recovery, that was very true. And I think that when two people come together, I think it's interesting. I often find when I work with couples that there are very similar issues that are going on with both people. And I kind of think of it as how each person is protecting themselves and what it is that they're trying to get from another person that they need to give to themselves and learn how to strengthen themselves as individuals. So there's a whole lot of issues in this one topic. So I'm not sure.
Right.
Would anybody like to share about this? Because this involves codependency. This involves, you know, being in a relationship and the person is still connected to the unhealthy parent who might have abused them.
Correct.
So they're more connected to the unhealthy parent than they are to their mate. So it really is a wide, it's a big topic.
Yeah, that's why I wanted to slim down and define what you meant by trauma bonding, because to me, it has all to do with the dirtiest word in all of our vocabulary, which is relationships. The R word.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And we don't do relationships well, even with healthy people, frankly, but when there's two sick people in that relationship, and it could be a parent and a child, it could be an abuser and a victim, it could be siblings, it could be married couple, it could be just friends, it could be people you meet in the group here, you know, in the family.
Mm-hmm.
But so it's the R word that I think it's all about, right? Am I right?
Can I chime in? It's Bailey.
Yeah.
Sorry, Linda. Uh-oh. I didn't know where you were saying my name from. Anyway,
that's okay.
Trauma bonding is a lot like Stockholm syndrome, where a person is abused or in a very toxic relationship, and they hold an emotional connection to the captiver, if it's an abusive, you know, if it's abuse, it's their captive, it's their abuser, sorry. And it's, they're manipulated, and it's almost like being held hostage. So that's why there are many times children or young adults that are being sexually abused, they are so manipulated by their abuser, and they don't tell anybody. And then the same thing goes for instance, domestic violence or being in a violent relationship, where some people just don't know how to get out. They're so they're so manipulated and brainwashed that they just don't know how to get out of it. So this is what my research has showed me on this topic of trauma bonding. And like I said, it's very similar to Stockholm Syndrome. And I know that that term became very familiar when that, I forgot what her name was, that young girl was
Patty
kidnapped.
Hurst. What? Yeah, Patty Hearst.
No.
Are you talking about Patty Hearst or younger?
No, younger. A blonde girl.
No. Please.
I forgot what her name was.
Elizabeth Hart?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, Elizabeth.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hart. I think so. Yeah, where she was in public, right? He would take her in public, and she was scared to say anything. Yeah. So they called it Stockholm Syndrome, which is why she didn't. They're so brainwashed and manipulated and so scared that they don't, sometimes people, they'll lie even to protect their abuser. So
I think that's
my
the Dubin situation in California. But anyway, that's an extreme example, okay? But I can give you a common example that might fit for other people listening, and that's that I certainly had, I guess it was trauma bonding. I'd never used the term before, but I had a girlfriend who, while I was drinking and using and still suffering from my own trauma, I ran into, and she became a kind of a victim for me in the sense that she was obviously really sick. I didn't know I was as sick as I was at the time, but I could see she was, and I kind of captured her, into my life because I was going to help her. I mean, that's, one sick person helping another, it doesn't really work. I didn't know this for years. I was with her for 15 years. Even after I started recovery, I was with her. We eventually had a child together, and just a couple of years after our daughter was born, I realized that I had made a mistake and I had married the wrong person. But I was grateful about the child. We split up. But I recognized it in recovery that this had been going on for a number of years, like 10 years or more, prior to our splitting up. And that was because it's a case just very similar to a lot of other cases where two sick people find each other. And it's kind of like their illnesses coincide. They kind of fit into each other like puzzle pieces. And it becomes a very sick relationship then. And you have to make a decision at some point, and if you wish, at some point, to stop the suffering by separating from that person. I mean, I had to. Setting whatever boundary was going to be, and for me it was a friendly divorce, but a divorce nonetheless, and a shared custody of our child and so forth. It turned out to be great, and, I still love my first wife, but I knew, 27 years ago or something, it was wrong to stay married to her. It was going to be worse for the child if I stayed until the child understood what was going on, or I could leave when she was still a toddler and didn't really get it. And that's indeed what we did. That's kind of going to be a more common, perhaps, experience. And the kind that you're describing, Linda, of the parent and the child who are tied up with each other, obviously, their parent and child, when the child starts to recover and the parent doesn't. So these are the common, I think, uses of what you're talking about.
Absolutely, and sometimes when I see this often, when two people, like you were describing, Bill, have trauma in their background, they subconsciously find each other. I don't know how it is. I mean, I know it happened to me way back when, and I see it all the time. So it's just interesting.
Can I pipe in again? I'm going through I'm just looking through all my papers with all these different, all the things I've collected over time. And trauma bonding can really have a lot of interpretations. It could be trauma bonding with a parent and child. There can be trauma bonding with an abuser or captive or whatever, and they're abused. Same with a violent spouse and then the spouse, and they stay in the relationship. But as far as children and sex and being exposed to abuse, they often survive. Their children that are exposed to abuse, their reaction is often to survive rather than to escape. So it leads to a cycle where they become a passive to their abuser, and then they begin to see it as normal behavior. They also may develop feelings of attachment and dependence. So there's a lot, trauma bonding there's so many different, I mean, it's all the same thing, the attachment, but there are different, it can happen in so many different scenarios. That's what I meant.
Okay, and I'm turning on Johnny Rock's mic. We're going to leave the mics on, ladies, so that whoever wants to talk can, unless there's a huge amount of problem with somebody's background noise. So I want to make sure that everybody's conscious of the fact your mics are all on, and we'd appreciate it if you mute yourself on your end so that you can open your mic on your end to speak and then close it again. That lets me keep all the mics on and allow whoever wants to share next. That's kind of the cadence of this show, a little different than the panel shows, because essentially every panelist here is part of the discussion group. And, you know, as long as any one person doesn't dominate the air, everybody gets a chance. Now, there's only four panelists or four others besides this voice here, so we can handle this no problem. Lori, were you happy with some of the responses, and where would you like to take the discussion at this point?
Well, you know, I was just sitting with what I was experiencing. I kind of get confused when words are used that I like to think of for survivors out there who are listening, and to make it really simple, we're drawn to what's familiar. Mm. And it's very true in relationships. We're drawn to what's familiar. It doesn't mm-hmm. matter how sick it is. It doesn't matter. It's familiar. And you have to understand that when we think of love, when I thought of love, love to me was terror. Love was filled with anxiety and sitting on the edge of my seat. And because I grew up in a family of incest. And so I didn't know what love was. Love was just, I was drawn to craziness. I was drawn to somebody who ignored me. Like if I was drawn to a man, I was drawn to somebody who would not talk to me, would pull away, would punish me in their silence. But this was what was familiar to me. I didn't know any different. I didn't know that I was drawn to this. And it's so much easier to think. And I remember when I got into recovery, I thought, you know, God, I'm such an open person. And why did I pick a man that withdraws and doesn't want to talk? Well, the truth is, I was just as frightened with connection as he was. It only looked different on my end. So I like to kind of think of it as we're just drawn to what's familiar, and familiar doesn't mean healthy. And recovery has taught me that there were many things that I did to promote unhealthiness in my relationships. And it wasn't just the other person. It was about me. Mm-hmm. And my whole recovery has been about seeking out, finding what I'm doing in my relationships that are preventing me from getting what I think I need. instead of looking at the other person and blaming them and thinking they're the bad guy. Because I think that's what we tend to do in relationships when we get in after surviving in childhood abuse. We tend to feel like the victim. We continue to feel like somehow we're a victim instead of bring it's not the other person's fault. It's the way we both contribute to the situation that creates the problem. So I guess I just like to think of it in simpler kind of, and I really like to think in terms of people protecting themselves, because I often see people pushing each other away, and each person sees the other person's way of pushing away, but they don't see their own way of pushing away. And so we learn to protect ourselves as children. Then we grow up and we learn to protect ourselves as adults. And that protection does not bring closeness to another. We protect ourselves from closeness. We don't bring closeness to us. So it's really quite a big topic, actually.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, that was good. Let me ask Johnny if he'd like to contribute anything, because he's the only one who hasn't spoken yet. And then we'll just open it up again. Johnny, are you okay? Or do you
I'd like to share, because I was thinking about this trauma bonding and thinking about back when I was, 8, 9, 10 years old. And I believe I'm on the right track with this, as whereas when I felt like when I was getting beating and abused, it was a form of attention, and that's what I sought. So sometimes I would act out and do something wrong just so I would get that attention. And I know it's thinking, it's not that, it was wrong, but am I on the right track? Was that trauma bonding for me?
Sure.
Okay. Yeah. And I think that even carried on in my adult life, where I would intentionally act out or do something negative to get a negative thing, because it's still a form of attention. And thank God I don't do that anymore. But I've never heard of that term, trauma bonding. I always thought trauma bonding was when you meet somebody that's been through something similar, so you have a bond because I went through the same thing, and you're able to relate to each other, which is very common, because it's almost everybody I meet has been through some type of abuse in the past.
Right. Okay. Thank you for that. Remind people
that's all
that
I had.
Please keep yourself. That's good. That was a good share. Please keep yourself muted if you are not talking, and then unmute yourself to be able to share. But that was a good share, I think, a very good share from you, Johnny. And Linda, are we anywhere near the topic that you were originally going for?
Yeah, absolutely. What Lori shared. Before Johnny shared, I thought, Lori, that was so well articulated, and that hit me like a ton of bricks, because what you were saying, we're drawn to what's familiar. I call that comfortable pain. That's my term, comfortable pain. And we're drawn to that. Even though it's painful, we're used to it. And when you were talking about someone that, you're drawn to something that is opposite of you, and you wonder why, but deep down you have the same fear of intimacy as that other person. When I first got married, I thought that I had it all together. I thought I had worked through my relationship stuff. I thought I knew how to pick, the right person. And I did pick a good person, but I didn't realize we both had fear of intimacy. And so now that I'm working through that, what you said that hit me like a ton of bricks was, I can't look at what he's not doing or what he's doing wrong. I have to look at what I'm not doing or what I'm doing wrong. That's the only part that I need to be looking at. And even though I know that and I remember that, it's just like as we're going through, like reconnecting, it's such a great reminder, Lori. So thank you so much for that.
Oh, I really, believe me, Linda, I have lived in this a lot. And I think the thing that I worked the hardest on in myself is identifying what I do. Can everybody hear an echo in my voice?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, it's not you. It's one of the other people. Again, you have to mute your end, everybody else who's not talking, and then unmute yourself when you want to talk. I can control it on my end, and then I just have to be calling on people, and that's fine if it has to work out that way. But, Laura, you were just hearing some feedback from an open mic there.
Oh, okay. You know, for instance, I'd be sitting something so simple. I'd be sitting in the living room with my husband. At the time, I married somebody in recovery. And, of course, I married out of fear. And I stepped into a marriage as a little girl. And by the time I got divorced, I moved through a lot of my abuse recovery. And I really felt like I grew up in it and was, my needs really were different. But I remember sitting in his silence, and in my head, I was thinking, God, why doesn't he just talk to me? Like, what? I was so focused on him and what he was doing and what he wasn't doing that I never thought to say, well, when I sit here with you and you're silent, like it scares me.
I love that.
Because my father was silent. And when I sat in a room with him and there was silence, I felt terrified. I never knew what to expect. And so when I was with my husband, the first relationship I got into in my recovery, and he was silent, I either picked a fight and I never thought, gee, Lori, you're picking a fight. Now, how is that connecting? Mm. You know, but instead I would pick a fight, or I would be judgmental of him for being so quiet. Or I would, you know, but I never stopped to look at how afraid I was in that moment and how my not saying anything was me living in fear and me being a little girl with daddy, not a grown woman with my husband. But I kept looking at him as though he were doing something that was making it so we couldn't connect. Not that I was doing something.
Mm.
And I feel like that is what it's about for people.
Yeah. Very good. Another very good explanation. See, I told you guys Lori was great. So several
you know,
of us
I'm
have
glad
described
I'm making sense.
Symptoms using... Well, kind of. No, you are.
I feel
I
like I might not.
To the show, Victoria. Okay, you got to... You got to listen. A little bit of a pause helps, so that someone else can go on the mic. And it's just a learning curve here thing here. Victoria Kelly has joined us, however, and I want to acknowledge her on the panel. I'm going to open her mic, but I'll ask her to close her mic on her end, and then listen to the sharing a little bit before she jumps in. But Victoria Kelly from Minnesota, you're always welcome on the panel, and we're delighted to see you here. We've all of us described in various terms, but in similar states, in similar definitions, a relationship between two people where both people share common experience of having trauma in their life. They may not even recognize it, but I call it their traumas fitting into each other, or their diseases fitting into each other. Others say it's because of the family we grew up in and the foundation of our life, you know, makes us pick the same kind of partner we swore we'd never have, like the domestic violence partner if we had that in our home, things like that. So it's all about us working on us, though, not on them. In the end, that's what we have. That's what we do here. We work on us, not them. Just like an Al-Anon recognizes that the problem isn't the alcoholic, it's them who live with the alcoholic You know, it's their own problem. It's not the alcoholic's problem that we have to work on. So in this case, it's our own trauma that moves our own recovery work, not working on the other person, that moves us forward, simply put. We have a nice panel now, including Bailey, Victoria, Johnny, Linda, Lori Golden, who is our co-host tonight, and she's a psychotherapist of many years, in recovery many years, and is an incest survivor. And that's the show tonight. All right.
I'm delighted to be here.
Discussion. We're delighted to have you, Victoria. Linda, you started this discussion, so let me ask you to take the point that you want to take from what's been said and move us forward.
Okay. I guess what we have to be very aware of is our own stuff and our own issues. And when we're drawn to someone, when we want to get into a relationship with someone, we have to be very aware of what's going on inside of us that's attracting us to that person. Is it healthy? Is it something that is familiar, as Lori said? Is it something that we've been drawn to in the past when we weren't healthy? All of those things. But we have to look at the relationships we're in now as we're going through healing to see what is healthy and what isn't. Because that trauma bonding, that being pulled to what's familiar, is most of the time, because of our past, not healthy. So with that, I would open it up to another topic, or somebody wants
can
to
I,
find another.
It's Bailey.
Deadly.
Lori, hi. I want to know, because you said something before about, you know, marrying someone very similar to what you were used to. For me, it was a little bit different. I was in a very unhealthy, toxic, abusive marriage for 21 years. And then a few years later, I got into a relationship that I just recently finally ended for real 2 months ago. But the unhealthiness and toxicity, I realized was emotional abuse, and I was able to compare it to some of the behaviors of my ex-husband. Now, I'm an advocate, so I'm always preaching to my friends all over social media about this stuff, and I did get a lot of help, and I thought I was better. I thought I was healthier. So did it come to a point where you found what was inside of you that led you? My question is, how do I not repeat that? I am angry at myself for allowing it to go on for 2 years, I knew that it was bad for me. But unfortunately,
you're
very lonely. Yeah.
You just said you knew it was bad for you. How did you know that?
Because I knew that it was not. I wasn't happy. I would be crying all the time. It would be sad. That's not a relationship. It wasn't equal. I was a giver. He was a taker. And because of the loneliness.
But you knew that. But you knew that fairly quickly, didn't you?
No.
Are you talking about with your?
No, I'm talking about with this relationship. My first relationship, probably ever, other than my husband.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Let's change the topic very slightly by adding one syllable. And let's talk about trauma unbonding. Because what we want to do here is we want to talk about the solution, not the problem. We know about the problem. How about the solution? So unbonding. We know that traumatized people find traumatized people. Sick people find sick people. How do we get out of that? So traumatized unbonding, let's talk about that a little bit.
You know, I really wanted to say, Bailey, when you were talking, that what I really noticed in myself was I knew when something was off, and growth for me and the solution was recognize time I was uncomfortable. And often my breathing would shift. I feel certain sensations in my chest. I feel a kind of discomfort. And there was a time where I would talk myself out of that and find ways to deny what I was really experiencing. Mm-hmm. And then I got to a point where I would say, I'm uncomfortable. I need to listen to this. Something is making me uncomfortable. Listen, Lori, pay attention. And that was how I feel like I started changing in who I attracted to me. Because I think we really do know what's not okay. And I think we have great feelers out when we grow up and we survive abuse. I think that we're very in tune with when something is coming in at us. And then we do this crazy making thing. We try to talk ourselves out of it.
Right. Right.
Then we go back and forth with the pros and cons. Why do I feel this way? I shouldn't feel this way. They're not doing it on purpose. They're just trying to be nice. They're
right.
not, you know. We do this craziness instead of really listening. I'm uncomfortable, and that's okay, and that's enough. And if you're uncomfortable, and then you can say that to another person directly, and they do not respond to it, then you really mm-hmm. start to gather information about the person you're with.
Right.
Right.
Do you want somebody to listen to your discomfort?
Like...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel
that's the beginning is the recognition. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Bailey.
Yep. I attract these kind of people, and I'm trying so hard not to. I'm trying. I mean, we can't help who we're attracted to, but we can see the signs of unhealthiness, and not allow ourselves to get into something. I don't know how. Like my friends always tell me, you're always looking for relationships in the wrong places. I can't make myself be attracted to what I'm not attracted to, but I also I'm not going to tolerate that behavior anymore. So
mm-hmm.
I guess I'm going to be alone. So that's the way I'm
at. I think being alone is a good thing.
No.
I think it can really heal.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that.
Doesn't mean you have to stay alone. It's just being alone can be very freeing.
I
know it's helped
that way.
Me in many ways. Yeah.
Whatever. Yeah, it's a hard thing to get past, and I'm at a point in my life where I feel I'm ready for companionship. Those 2 years I was alone, really. I wasn't happy, and that's finally I had enough, but I guess when the time is right, it'll happen, that's all. But thank you for sharing.
All right.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's. I think the recognition of the problem is the beginning of it, of the untangling, you know, the disengagement, the unbonding. And then it's going to be about me. What am I going to do about my behavior that changes who I look
yep.
for, who I allow in? What do I change about the current relationship and so forth? There's a lot of things that can be done to unbond, in other words, and that's all towards the solution and away from the problem. We're halfway through the show. We're more than halfway through the show, if you can believe it or not. That's how fast these episodes go when we get a good topic, and this is an excellent topic. since Victoria Kelly has not shared on it, let me ask if she has something she'd like to participate with, especially in terms of the solution. Victoria?
Sure. Yes. I appreciate the input so far that I've heard, and I just want to quick say that I was in a relationship with my husband that, in a way that it was toxic, is that, you know, I was very needy, and he kept trying to fix me, you know, when I got into the relationship. And he took care of me all the time. Like, he'd leave work if I was real stressed out. He'd bring me to the hospital, stay with me, and visit me almost every day. Well, I finally had to leave him, you know, and like Bill was saying in Al-Anon, I realized I had no power over, you know, him, his behavior, his feelings, none of that, you know. I learned how to be assertive instead of passive. I learned about myself, which I had no idea what I liked and what I needed, what I wanted, none of that, you know. And we've been apart for like 10 years and we're still friends. But he was mentioned to somebody that we argue more than we ever did when we were in our marriage. And I quickly responded, that's because I kept everything inside and I didn't feel like I could, you know, say how I felt, or I just walk away because I didn't like to argue. I just leave or just walk in the other room because it takes two to argue. And it's just interesting that I have no need or feeling that I even want to be in a relationship because I have so much stuff I want to do that I don't even have time to go out for a cup of coffee with somebody to create a relationship. But that's mm-hmm. where I'm at. I'm not
and Victoria wasn't here to hear me say it. Yeah, you weren't here to hear me say it, but I had that kind of relationship too, except I was the other person. I was the controller, mm-hmm. and my wife was the very needy person who desired to be led, but not really. I mean, she still had a huge self-will of her own, and I found out that although I did control in one sense, it was false control. I never could control her. And I ended up having to leave in order to take back my own life because I was stuck in the cycle. And so in my case, I was the one that began recovery and she didn't. I still love her. I still interact with her even to today and so forth. So this is another example of, I mean, it can be either side of the equation. In other words, it can be the one who kind of gets the surprise answer, you know, and starts on their recovery. All right, so that was a good share, Victoria. Thank you. Let's see, who have we not gone to? But, Johnny, I think you'd be next if you want. It's up to you.
I'd just like to share, just touch on what we're talking about here about relationships and, you know, about being alone and not being alone. You know, I always felt like the relationships that I got into, I had that Superman complex where I was looking for somebody that needed saving, and I wasn't able to be that person because I needed saving myself, really. But I was ignoring that fact, and
right.
So but now I'm at a point in my life where I'm attracted to people that are. That are independent and doesn't need saving, and that I look up to, that I admire, that are strong, and but in the same sense, I feel like I don't want to depend on them to have to save me either. You know, I could easily be happy. Never being in a love relationship, but still having a bonding relationship with people that I love, but not in love with, if that makes any sense, you know, because I'm perfectly happy. Although I am lonely sometimes, I'm happy doing the advocacy work that I do and just being an entertainer and making people happy and making people laugh and smile. And I don't know if that's healthy or not. But it's working for me now.
Yeah. So, Lori, let me ask you this, see what you have to say about it. But a lot of what we're talking about is you know, a decision that we have to make, often meaning that we have to, often, not always, but often meaning we have to leave the relationship. That's, that becomes boundary setting. But is there, that first question I want to add, the question I want you to answer specifically is it possible for a bonded, you know, a traumatic relationship to continue when one person is healing and the other person is stagnant? Is that even possible?
In my experience, I haven't yet over the years, and it's been many years, where I think what happens is one person outgrows the other. And when two people are willing to step in and do the work, and I have seen that as well, then a lot can happen. But if one person is really moving forward in their own work, and what happens is you tend to, you just outgrow the other person. You need more. You want deeper communication. You want somebody to be taking responsibility and take ownership for what they do in the relationship. And often when people are stagnant, they're not taking responsibility for what they do in their life. They're just allowing themselves to get stuck in a groove. And somebody who doesn't want to be in a groove isn't going to be satisfied with that. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, it did to me. That's a great answer. Linda, you know, I know that, I think the relationship you're talking about is with a parent and a child. And, of course, you can't completely, I guess you can. You can divorce your family. But I think, did you want to speak to that? Because that's a little different than having a sort of an intimate, in that sense, relationship or a, you know, a marriage or something. Is that where you were going with it, Linda?
Well, no, but I wanted to comment on the unbonding. What I found works with unbonding is, as Lori was saying, when one person changes and the other doesn't, that becomes the problem. But even one person can make a unhealthy trauma bonding healthy simply by, let's say, the people weren't connecting, forcing or acknowledging there's no connection and saying, I need connection. We need to connect. And if that other person responds or doesn't respond, that relationship can become healthy. If they don't respond, then the person can choose to leave or not. But that is how you unbond in a relationship. And the other person can choose either to grow and change or not grow and change. And that's, you know, I've seen it go both ways. So that, but we always have the power. That's what I want to get across to the listener. You always have the power to make even an unhealthy relationship either healthy or knowing it can't get healthy, and then you can choose to walk away. But you always have that power in your behavior.
You know, that's a good point, Linda. That's a really good point, because I was just talking to somebody in my niece, and she was saying, we were having this discussion, when do you know it's okay to walk away from something? And I really feel like when you change your behavior and your reactions to things that you don't like, and it's not moving forward, that's when you get to see, is this person going to be enough? Is this person going to step into healthiness with me? Because I often feel like we focus on changing the other person. And if only they could be different, then we'll be okay. And it never works. And if you absolutely can change unhealthy patterns by making a shift in yourself. And when you shift, someone has to do something different. And
that's
if
right.
they don't do something different, then you get to see that.
That's great. Yeah. All right. Who would
can
like
I
to
chime in?
Share the next bit?
It's Bailey.
Yeah, you can chime in.
With what Linda and Lori were just saying, resonates with me tremendously because I was already changed. I was just being pulled back to unhealthiness and toxicity, and I kept seeing that, and it took me finally almost 2 years to say, I'm not doing this anymore. The person the other person would say, yeah, I know I'm messed up, blah, 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 but was not willing to get any help. And every time they would say, I'm going to change, it would be for a day or two or 3 days and then go right back to that behavior. Unless people deal with their childhood trauma, whatever it is that's unhealthy, you can't change. We can't change them, and they can't change themselves. They need real help. And what you were saying before, the two of you, we have to be the ones that have to unbond and recognize that person is not going to change. And in the same way with unhealthy parents, I know a lot of people that have unhealthy parents, and they because it's their parent, they want that connection, they want that love so badly that it's a vicious cycle. They constantly are hoping, okay, this time they're going to be different. This time they're going to be different. And, you know, for a few days, you know, all lovey and good, and then it goes back to the same. If somebody is sick, they're sick. And some people can't change. So we either can accept the way they are and have that toxic in our life, but it's going to pull you down. So you can either, you know, have a relationship from a distance, especially with, I'm referring to a parent or a sibling or whatever, or cut ties, because otherwise we will never continue to grow and get healthy. So that's what
yeah.
I have to say.
You know,
Bailey,
go ahead, Johnny.
Yeah, if I could say something, yeah, because this is really is burns his eye on me, because I, you know, especially with Mother's Day just passing up, you know, I was able to break that trauma bond and, you know, get away and just disassociate myself from her, and I was healing. But then when I found out that she was dying of cancer, I felt the urge to let her know that I forgave her, and I really wanted to hear her say that she was sorry, and I did everything in my power to try and get her to let me see her on her deathbed, and she refused to let me see her. So I never got that. I never got to tell her that I forgave her. And I never got to hear the words, I'm sorry. So there was a hole there in my soul. But I think that's where the serenity prayer comes in, where accept the things that you cannot change. So I'm past that now. And it's been, this will be, May 25th will be 5 years since she passed away. But it's only been 1 year since I can literally say that I really do forgive her in my heart. And it was really hard. But I think that's when the trauma unbonding really, really happened, was when I was able to forgive not only her, but the fact that I never got to hear her say I'm sorry, and that I never got to tell her that I forgave her. So that's a real big issue. I'm glad that we talked about this trauma unbonding.
Good.
So thank you.
Isn't it always the case that it has to be our action that changes? We can't change the other person. We can't expect them to change. We can possibly change something in ourselves. And I can only do that with a lot of help from my higher power, frankly. But I can't change anybody else. So the decision is, what action am I going to take that's different? That might result in a different, you know, outcome. And that's always about me. It's never about the other person.
Absolutely.
Again, that might be the boundary setting that I mentioned before. But it's something in me. And if I keep going back into those unhealthy relationships, I got nobody to blame but myself, you know, in the end.
Right.
Because I can change something in me that has a possibility of a different outcome. And by the way, hoping for an apology from a predator or from an abuser is really not going to happen. It's not going to happen very often. It hardly ever happens. And it's often not sincere anyway. They don't understand. Because they're not us. I mean, they're not experiencing the trauma. Victoria, did you want to share something?
Right now, I'm just
okay.
Listening. It's really hitting me.
Got it. No problem.
Listening.
All right.
Yep.
So, Lori, Linda, either of you?
Yeah. I agree in terms of wanting an apology from an abuser. If they have not sought out any help, then you can't ever expect a sincere apology. You know, somebody has to be in pain about their own behavior and the pain they've inflicted on others in order for an apology to be real. And I find abusers don't, unless they seek out their own recovery and truly are remorseful at some point about what they did. But that doesn't happen a lot, unfortunately. And I know somebody, I think it was you, Barry, who said, and we want to get, we keep getting drawn back in and looking for something different and then getting surprised. You didn't quite say this, but this is what I'm thinking. Like we're drawn to something, we keep going back and, you know, thinking that it's just going to, wishing and hoping. And I know when I grew up as a kid, I wished and hoped that things would be different. I never learned that as an adult, you have to give up wishing and hoping. That doesn't work. We can't wish our way into something different, and we can't hope for something different. We have to make it different, or it won't happen.
Right.
So it's an interesting thing.
I always
say
we have to act our way into it. A change in action on our part, some change in action. By the way, forgiveness can be done without confronting the person, without in the presence, being in the presence
Absolutely.
Of the person, because forgiveness
Absolutely.
Is a matter of the heart anyway. Releasing them into who they are and whatever happened between us. Again, I'm trying to change my behavior, and that's one of the things I can change, to not require I'm sorry too back, you know, for example. It's not going to happen anyway. Linda, how are we doing?
I'm doing good. And I agree with that, the apology we're never going to get. And I did my forgiveness work before my memories came back. But I tell you, after I disclosed and was disowned, I had to do that work all over again. And they're still alive. And I wanted peace. And I couldn't get peace unless I forgave them and let it go. And gave it up, and then the pain subsided, and the rage was definitely gone. I mean, there's still days where I feel like it's unfair and unjust, but those days are fewer and far between, and so I'm grateful for that.
Yeah. Wow, great show tonight. We still have 20 minutes left, so there's plenty of time for more discussion on this, or perhaps another topic. It's up to the group. if they decide that they want to continue on this, we can go on. So I'm going to be quiet for a moment here, see if anybody takes the bait. And if you'd like to continue this topic, we can. Otherwise, we can start with a new topic.
Yeah, that's an interesting trying to sit with
okay.
this.
Okay. Okay. Well, Lori, where would you like to take us?
Forgiveness is an interesting topic to me, and a lot is said about forgiveness. And I know for me, my father's behavior was evil. There is nothing to forgive about that. What I felt in myself was I needed to learn how to love me, and I needed to forgive all the abusiveness I did to myself and all the hurt I put myself through and all the meanness I perpetrated towards myself as a result of being exposed to that. And I know from my mother, I didn't see my mother for 16 years in my recovery, and I knew that I had to do that in order to live, because I was constantly triggered into feeling suicidal around my mother, and I felt invisible when I was with her, and I knew that unless I stopped hating myself and self-destructing and wanting to kill myself, I could not be in a relationship with her, or I wouldn't be able to continue to live. And I really wanted to live at that point. So, and having her back in my life, it's not even about forgiving. I know she's sick, and I know she's been very sick, and I know she's probably been abused herself, I have no doubt. And I know that she lives in dissociation, and she does not live in the reality that I live in today. And I can't expect anything from her having to do with, I don't look to her for anything anymore. That is the only way I learned to be able to be in a relationship with her, is letting go of not expecting anything. And really, forgiveness has been so much about forgiving me and what I did to myself because of the neglect and the abuse and the trauma, the pain that was inflicted on me. And I just feel like loving myself has been forgiveness. You know, self-love and self-care
Great.
Has been like my way of forgiving. I'm just saying
okay.
that's one aspect of forgiveness for me.
No, that's great. I want to welcome to the show Karen from Maine. She often listens to the entire show and then calls in late because of the bad telephone connection she has up there in the wild blue yonder. So Karen from Maine, welcome to the show. I know you've heard the whole show probably. You're on the panel now, and I've opened your mic. Did you want to share unbonding in terms of forgiveness?
Thank you, Bill. Yes, I think it's been a great show. I must say that the first marriage I went through was very much mirrored many of the details of the others, the other people. But I had no problem walking away. And also, you know, I've had a great marriage. I think I might have mentioned that for a long, long time now. And what's funny about that is it took him a little while to tell me this. But, of course, I knew this about myself. By the time I had my second marriage, my late 30s, which has been 30 years plus now, I had got to, you know, certain things. You know, you got to be honest. And I had a criteria. I know you're going to get a 10 set of faults. There's nobody perfect. But, there were certain things that, you know, had to be there. And then, of course, I found out that I passed his test, too. I didn't even know he'd had one. But sure enough, I passed all his tests. So as you know, it's not going to be long that I can hang on, so I don't want to ramble. But I want anyone to join in with me, because I know you all know it. It's really, really the gist of this show. So please, if you want to, join in on with me. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Thank you all very much. Yes, it's been an excellent show.
Please, Karen, tell your husband he's in our prayers, okay? Because I know.
Thank you very, very. Thank you very,
situation.
Very much.
All right.
Thank, yes, he is. Right. He's in a lot of pain. God love him. Thank you.
I know he is. I know he is.
Putting the earbuds
God
on,
bless,
babe.
Karen,
I'm still here.
You.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, great. So forgiveness as a part of unbonding, I think, is a really important kind of topic to end on. And a couple of people have shared on it so far. Who would like to take the next share?
I love what Lori said about forgiving yourself, because that's an ongoing one. I mean, a lot of us have done serious damage to ourselves health-wise and that. And I know for myself, for many years, I did damage. And now some of the things that my body is damaged by, I don't have the money to fix right now. So it's very frustrating. And I start beating myself up for doing that damage in the first place when that's the last thing I need to be doing for myself. So that was a great reminder, Lori, of the forgiveness of yourself ongoing.
It's ongoing.
Okay. All right. I would like to take it another step, and that is forgiveness of the other. Because I understand the one about forgiveness of ourselves, and I think that probably comes first. But then at a certain point, forgiveness of the other may become important, and it did for me. While my mother was still living, just as Johnny shared, I had a mother who became, my father and sister both were gone. So I was the only family member left when my mother was elderly, and she needed caring for. But I was not willing to participate in her BS, you know, her bad behavior. So, and I told her that, and I would not put up with it. However, what I would do, and my forgiveness came in this form, I forgave her for her humanity. Now, I didn't go to her and say, I forgive you, Mom, for your humanity. This was an inside job. But I forgave her. It's kind of like the commandment that says, honor thy mother and thy father. You know, I honored her in the situation she was in as being who she was without me having to change her. But what I did have to change was me. And then I could be in her presence most of the time. She knew not to, she couldn't control me the way she used to when I was younger. And that's a forgiveness of her. It wasn't even verbalized, but it was real. And the last 5 years of her life, I was her primary caregiver, you know, and then the last year and a half after that, she was in an Alzheimer's unit, and I could see her deteriorate to this little girl who, you know, she had no compulsion to control me anymore. She didn't know who she was or where she was. It didn't matter. She was a human, though, in this senior facility Alzheimer's unit, who I honored by, you know, showing up, by supporting, by visiting, by bringing little gifts and trying to remind her who I was and how much I loved her and so forth. That was how I made my amends to her, too, because I had done stuff to her as well. It's not, these relationship things are not one-sided things. And I felt that it was part of my program to make amends, which in this case, of course, is a living amends. But it doesn't have to be verbalized. As part of the amends process, it says, except we make amends except when to do so would injure them, meaning the person we're making the amends to, or others. So, you know, holding your heart ready to make that amends should that day ever arrive is enough to be considered making amends. And forgiveness is easy when you see that they're sick just like we are. Just like we are. So that,
I
that helps
totally
somebody.
Agree with
Johnny,
that. No, I totally agree
Johnny,
with
welcome
that, Bill. I feel, yeah.
Go ahead, Lori.
Oh, no, I think you said that beautifully. Yeah, I agree that it is
okay.
In the heart, and it is not something, although I did talk to my mother about forgiveness, but it's, you know, it's knowing the sickness of abuse and trauma. I mean, the sickness that everybody is affected by. And it's just part of the whole thing. Everybody is affected by it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, Johnny dropped off when he's back. I was just trying to tell him that he was back. Thank you, Lori, for that your kind words. But I really do think that, you know, it really helped me. This is part of my program because it released me. And, you know, when she did die, when I was able to let her go with love, just like I was my father and my sister before her, let her go with love and feel about myself that I had done the right stuff as best I could. In the end of her life, I showed up for her, not for me, for her, because I was her son, and I owed her that, you know? I mean, I wanted to honor actually, it was my father's wish, too. On his deathbed, which he died 10 years before she did, he whispered to me, you know, make sure you take care of your mom. I mean, it was one of his last things he ever said to my sister and I, and so we did. And I was the last one standing, so I kept that up, and boy, I feel so much better about myself, I'm sure, than I would have had she died and I'd have been, you know, had a kind of a blackened heart against her, a soul, you know, my soul is on fire against her, which it's not.
Oh.
We got
yep.
8 minutes left. Go ahead, Lori.
No, I like the way you just said that, having a blackened heart, yes. It's not good for us to have a blackened heart, period.
No, yeah, period.
I love that.
As I was saying, we have about 8 minutes left. Who would like to share next? Linda, was that you?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I love what you just said about your mom, because when I mean, it's been 10 years, and I just reunited with her, and she's in really, really bad shape, but I felt like part of the reason I needed that peace was because throughout all the time I was damaging myself and rebelling from my abuse, she was a survivor herself. She tried to make it up to me. She tried to do the right thing. She tried to help me for years and years and years. And I just felt like that was part of my amends in understanding everything that's happened. So I just appreciated that, Cher.
Thanks.
All right. Victoria, I'd like to jump in.
Go ahead, Victoria.
I just have to say that I have no desire to forgive my father. And I kind of, just with all the evilness that he did to me and having to go into hiding and change my name and just the fear that I had of all the time, because his threat was if I ever left him that he would, you know, do a lot of harm to me. I'm not getting into it. But when I found out that he died, just the relief, boy, the freedom that I felt, you know, that I could just say, okay, my higher power is going to deal with him now, you know, and that's kind of how I felt all along, is one day, you know, I don't have the ability to judge or to forgive him, but, you know, that's not my deal, you know. But on the other hand, I made my mother and I, because she was so sick in the end, I was able to bring her back to Minnesota and have my daughter and my son care for her. And we were able to talk. And we both ended up for like the last month or two, pretty much most of the time, just crying in each other's arms and talking things through. So, I mean, you know, I like to have those two different experiences.
That's great, yeah. And of course, it's not necessary to do what I described. That's just my path, but it doesn't have to be anybody else's. I don't mean that. But it does work for me. That's all I'm saying. All right, we still have 5 minutes, a couple of quick shares, and then we're out of here. We're going to let Lori have a final share at the very end. So who else would like to add something to this topic?
I'll say something.
Unbonding by forgiving.
I was supposed to be quiet tonight, but this topic is ended up relating to me so much. I can't say that I forgive, especially my last, this just ended. So there's a lot of pain and anger towards myself for staying in it for so long. But going back to my ex-husband, I buried him. That was how I got rid of my anger. I went through a lot of group therapy, a lot of one-on-one therapy, and that was the best way to put that behind me and move forward, was burying the man that I married. And the man that walks this earth now is someone I don't know. I really don't. But I know that living with anger is horrible. It's
right.
Every day to have such anger within you, it destroys you. So why do
right.
that to yourself? So yeah,
I agree.
That was how I
dealt with it. Bailey is metaphorically saying buried. The man is still alive, but he's buried as far as she's concerned.
Right.
But yeah, anger is mine. And I can free myself of anger, but it's going to require my action, nothing else. The world doesn't have to change one iota for Bill to get comfortable. But something in Bill has to change, for sure. Maybe a number of things do. And it is possible to live anger, pretty much anger-free and comfortable inside your own skin. Okay, let's just go quickly. Thank you, Bailey. Thank you, Victoria. Go to Johnny or Linda, and then finally on Lori. Either one of you have something? I want to leave Lori a minute here. Okay. Then, Lori, the floor is yours. We have go ahead.
No, I just wanted to say you did a great show, Lori, and thank you so much.
No, you guys, we all did a great show. Thank you, though.
Yeah, this is a familial experience. Hopefully the Nazca family has meant something to those that were listening, too. That's why we do the show, for the listener. All right, Lori, you have about a minute to sum up some final thoughts.
Yeah, I just want to say that I love this stuff. I love honest sharing, and I love when people are willing to really talk openly about their own struggles and their own things that, you know, it just makes me feel so grateful to be a part of this in this moment. So I just want to thank everybody for all the sharing. Truly, thank you. I think everyone said really great things. So there's not much that I have to add at this point, except for thank you.
Well, that's succinctly said, though, and I know everybody on the panel and the listeners want to thank you, Lori, the excellent job you've done. Lori is our co-host, a survivor hyphen professional, and the people are all survivors of different types of child abuse, and they're professionals of all different types. Tonight's survivor was an incest survivor who also survived drug and alcohol use, who also survived an overeating problem, and has been a psychotherapist for years and years. We want to thank her, and she will be here on the second Tuesday of each month. For the rest of the panel, I thank you on their behalf and say may God bless you and the children of the world, and God bless adult survivors of child abuse. Good night, everybody.
Another tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You are forgotten after all that you've done.
Blog Talk Radio.